Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
We'll go back for some more Oscar memories coming up. Right now, though, time for the Weekend Health. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, joining us to bring us up to date on what's going on this week. Well, one of the big stories this week, Doctor, the death of Gene Hackman, and I'm not going to ask you about the particulars of that case, but I'm sure that you have encountered sort of mysterious or suspicious circumstances like this before, especially being in emergency medicine. What are some of the possibilities? They have ruled out carbon monoxide poisoning. They did testing and said that both Gene Hackman and his wife tested negative for carbon monoxide. What are some other possibilities with that?
Well, first of all, I just have to say the first movie my dad ever sat me down to watch when I became a young teenager was The French Connection.
Oh, wow.
And so I just remember you pick your feet in Poughkeepsie. And my dad just constantly saying that to me as a kid. So he was a huge movie buff, and he was also an emergency room physician, which kind of ties it all together. But, you know, I think you put on your medical examiner hat. And, you know, Dean, when I was in medical school, I did a rotation with the New York Medical Examiner at NYU, and really got to see a number of amazing cases and how they handle these sorts of medical mysteries. And what you try and do is, as a medical examiner, is you are part detective and part physician. You don't divorce yourself from what's going on at the scene. You try and use the facts on the ground and marry those with the facts of the body and try and make a reasonable judgment as to what might have occurred. And so we can certainly utilize those principles as we look from afar to try and understand what may have happened. I do find it interesting that the dog was found dead.
Yeah.
And so that does immediately raise the question of a more general exposure like carbon monoxide, which, by the way, we think about carbon monoxide and how it relates to us in Illinois, space heaters potentially or kerosene stoves, people that go ice fishing and bring a kerosene stove with them in a close space, or running your car in a garage. So those would be some examples of how you could get exposed to it. But like you said, negative on that. I believe that the body of the wife was found with pills scattered around it.
Correct.
And so it makes you wonder, you know, thinking about common things, you know, it does make you wonder, did she find his body and discover that he died, or hear him fall and realize he was dead and then suddenly decide that she was going to end it? And so she took some pills, fell to the ground, the pills scattered, and the dog ate the pills, and then the dog succumbed. That would be one possibility.
Right.
Of course, you'd want to know who's looking after these folks. Who, you know, does anybody have a motive? And when was the last time the caretaker, quote unquote, was there? And when were they supposed to be there? So you'd want to talk to the authorities as the medical examiner to understand, what are the realities here? Do you have a clear motive, or does it really seem like, you know, these people were just living their lives and then interrupted?
Yeah, they were sort of famously reclusive. So, you know, I don't know answers to any of those questions. I know that the caretaker hadn't been there for a couple of weeks, he had said. But the other thing that I wondered about, they were able to tell Gene Hackman's time of death by when his pacemaker stopped, which was,
right,
I believe it was 10 days prior to him being found. Is that how that works? Like, if you pass away, the pacemaker automatically turns off and is recorded someplace? Can you tell us a little about how a pacemaker plays into this?
Sure. Yeah, that's an interesting detail. Yeah, so there are, of course, different types of pacemakers, and they all have various settings. And you could theoretically set the pacemaker to stop at the time of death, although it's kind of irrelevant in the sense that a pacemaker, you want to think of it as sort of like a, almost like a clock. Like it just ticks along. And that's a very simplified mental model. There are very complicated settings that you can use. But just thinking about it really simply, it's a pair of wires that are inserted into the heart, into the top and bottom of the heart typically. And it can help to kind of manage the beating of each ventricle, either in isolation or together. And so what happens at death is that the pacemaker may still be firing, but those impulses don't do anything because the muscle is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you would see on the other end, all that information gets uploaded to a server somewhere. And then the cardiologist can log into the server through an app and see, okay, you know, here's the last 2 weeks of data, for instance. And what you would just see is you would see activity, and then stop. And then it would essentially be a flat line because there would be no electricity going through the tissue. And so that's presumably what happened in this case, that even though the pacemaker may still be quote-unquote functioning, it's not doing anything to the muscle, and therefore no signals are sent and or received.
Yeah, if the pacemaker had not been working properly or failed or battery ran out or, you know, something like that, could that cause death? A malfunction with the pacemaker itself?
It very well could. I'll tell you that I've looked at some of the studies just to prepare for this week, kind of to remind myself, and it's a rare event that the battery dies and then the human subsequently dies. Most of the time, even when the battery is near end of life, you still got quite a bit of time. And so most people end up changing them out. Now, if you're at a point in your life where you're kind of ready to die anyway, and you just don't want anything extending your life, if you're in that phase of life, for instance, as a hospice patient or just somebody who's in the twilight of their life and you're wanting to simplify, then you could say, hey, look, I'm not coming in for my battery change next month. I'm just going to let the thing, fade yeah. away, and I'll fade away, and I'm okay with that. So that's right. Certainly a possibility.
And very interesting. Another story that relates to today, Academy Awards Day, is that Harrison Ford was scheduled to be a presenter at the Oscars tonight. He has backed out because he's got shingles. He's dealing with shingles. Can you talk a little about that and what a person who is going through shingles endures? I know that it's very, very painful from anyone that I've talked to that has had them.
Yeah, I one in three people will have shingles in their lifetime. So it's very, very common and very, very painful. It is the varicella zoster virus. It's chicken pox. So you get chicken pox as a kid, and then what happens is the virus, after you get over the chicken pox, kind of curls up inside your body and just lays there, and sometimes for decades, not really causing any damage, but just almost think of it as like hibernation, like the cicadas. And then at the right time, when you're immunocompromised or stressed or just randomly, it will reemerge and become active again. And the way that it frequently becomes active is in a painful and or itchy and or tingly rash. And because the shingles hides out in these areas of the spinal cord that are the sensory areas of the body, you'll get these characteristic rashes that kind of fall along the lines of the sensory nerve. So you'll see it kind of curling around on one side of the body, and it mm-hmm. tends to be one-sided, not always, but typically. And it can be extremely painful. And miserable to deal with.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've all heard from people who have had them. Harrison Ford does now. Typically, how long does it take for this to clear or stop flaring up, I guess?
It depends. Now, some folks were immunocompromised or simply just in an elderly state can have significant complications from this. It can become disseminated, as they say, and you can even develop things like meningitis or pneumonia. Uncommon, but it does happen. So that can extend the illness significantly, but just the rash, typically around a month, although it can be longer. I've seen folks come in 6 weeks after they were diagnosed telling me they still have a little bit of pain in that area. So it can take a while.
Wow. And that's why we should all be getting our shingles inoculations, correct?
You got it, Dean. 50 years old, talk to your doctor. There's two shots, 6 months apart, and very effective at mitigating recurrence. And then if it does recur, limiting the symptoms for you.
Yeah,
the other good news, I guess, good news, quote unquote, is that there are antivirals that are available, which can shorten the length and severity of the illness. So if you think you might have a shingles-like disease, you don't have to suffer in silence. There's medication that can help.
Very good. We've got some texts and calls regarding vaccinations. We'll get to those as we continue with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Weekend health segment, because we're off at 10:30 this morning. We've got a mini show. Let's continue with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Kishwaukee Hospital, and get to some texts. Following up on what we're just talking about, Doctor, somebody on our text line asks if shingles are contagious.
They can be. They definitely can be. There's viral particles in the skin. So if you have any kind of oozing lesions or open lesions, consider yourself contagious until proven otherwise. So what we like to say is once everything's crusted over, you're good to go. But until that crusting phase occurs, please take caution.
All right. And enjoy your breakfast while we talk about things crusting, crusting over. 847.
Sorry for that.
That's okay. That's okay. This is a medical segment. 847, is it too late to get a flu or RSV shot?
Not at all. It's never too late. And the way these viruses are cycling sort of off cycle, if you will, I think it's perfectly reasonable to go now.
To go and get them until what time? When do we say that the flu season is over?
Well, it tends to end, you know, when the weather starts warming. But we've seen it last year. We were seeing it as late as late spring. The bigger key is, you know, I don't know that it ever truly ends per se. It definitely weakens and lessens. The real issue is, you know, the next year's vaccine when that comes out, because at a certain point you get the new strain coming from the other side of the world, from Australia, and so the CDC at some point will come out, usually in the early summer, and say, you know, here's the new formulation, and all the drug makers get a hold of it and start manufacturing it. And so by the time the fall rolls around, now you've got a new vaccine that you want to get a hold of. But until then, quite honestly, I think there's no harm in going out and getting it. It's been such a horrible flu season. I don't see it ending quite yet. They're still peaking in many parts of the U.S., so I think go for it.
Go for it. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Hope you have a great Sunday, Doc, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Take care, Dean.